If you don't grow, how can you get better? Yet, in a job where you can't get everything done, how do you find time to grow? Today, we have the 2024 Washington State Elementary Principal of the Year here to help us figure out how to prioritize growth. Hello, colleagues, and welcome to the Assistant Principal Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Frederick Buskey. We're all on a leadership journey. Every day, we have a chance to grow. Every day, we have a chance to help others grow. My goal and the goal of this podcast is to help you grow into being a strategic leader, a leader who puts people before purpose, who solves problems instead of treating symptoms, and who understands the difference between progress and action. Through this podcast, my daily email, and virtual programs, I'm working to build a network of inspired and inspiring school leaders. Let's get started on today's adventure and this unique opportunity to learn to live and lead better. Dr. Nick Davies is an associate principal for Vancouver Public Schools and an adjunct faculty member at Pacific University. He has a PhD in education and leadership and wrote his dissertation on curriculum implementation. Dr. Davies was named the 2024 Elementary Assistant Principal of the Year for the state of Washington. He has previously held roles as an associate principal athletic director and was a high school math teacher and head track and field coach, and he was a two-time state coach of the year in Oregon. Dr. Davies also served as a reservist in the U.S. Coast Guard. Nick, welcome to the show.
Frederick, man, thank you so much for having me. We met a while ago, and this is it's exciting to be on your podcast.
Nick, we always start with celebrations. So what are you celebrating today?
I was telling you just before we hopped on here, we were a little sick in my house recently. So I'm celebrating that we're all on the mend. We're getting healthy. I might still be a little congested. And I always got to celebrate my wife, Allison, who does just such an amazing job supporting with our kids. Right. So I'm in my office right now. And she's at home making sure that they're all well taken care of. So always celebrating her. And then along with, you know, hard to not be in this AP role without celebrating your principal, who is super supportive. And so I support two buildings. And so my principals, Mark and Matt, do an awesome job of helping me out. And then the other AP that I work with, Kelly, right there is super supportive. So celebrating that. What are you celebrating, Frederick?
So my first book is coming out. It's due out March 10th. We are recording this on February 21st. Hopefully by the time we release this episode, the book will be out. Wow. Thanks for asking.
Of course. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm excited for you.
Yeah, it's been a good road. Nick, is there a story that will help listeners understand why you're doing what you do?
Depends on how long we want to dive into this or how deep we want to go. One of the things that about like why I do what I do, I've got a few, you know, those why reasons. One are those three little kiddos running around in my house, because they make it easy to go to work every day, make sure that I can support them and give them the best life possible. So that, and knowing that my 5-year-old is in kindergarten now, like my expectation as a father is he has the best teacher possible. And if that's what my kid deserves, and that's what every kid deserves. And so as a school leader, hopefully I can help support teachers so they can be that best teacher possible for other people's kids, right? Because that's what parents are doing. They're giving us their babies. And so we need to make sure that we're treating them like our own kids when they're in the building. That's a daily why I show up every day. I love supporting teachers. I love supporting parents and kids in this leadership role. I never thought I would have left the classroom. And then when I did, I now think about it like, I don't know if I could go back because I love this supportive role that I'm in. I know that I am a step away from the kids, that's always a downside. But at the same time, getting to work with so many different teachers and being different classrooms, like I love that. And so that's a little snippet. I have a deeper why, and we can go into that if you want, but that's kind of like my daily why I love coming to work.
Yeah. Tell me about when was the moment that you were a teacher that you realized you were going to go into administration?
Ooh. So I'm not sure if there was a single moment. My mom always says I don't like being told what to do. And so I don't know if that is why one of the whys, right? I've always just been fascinated with leadership. And so what I've always wanted to step into, that I was a head track coach first before I became an administrator. And so like that was a really fun role to be in and getting to lead. We had 300 kids on the track team. And so getting to lead an environment like that, and then stepping into an AP role after that, like those seem like natural progressions because I love those leadership positions, and I love being challenged, right? So like obviously you're challenged every day in the four walls of your classroom, like teachers know that. And any given day you don't know what some of those kids are going to bring you. But I was looking just for a different type of challenge, right? And so now when you support, 1,000 plus students or whatever, you really never know what could ha happen or how many different classrooms you get to be in. And yeah, so just I like leadership positions, and so looking for new challenges is what I was going for as a teacher.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting because it really leads into why I really wanted to have you on the show because of your passion for learning and your passion for growth. And it's really easy for people to move into the assistant principalship and then just be totally consumed with everything that there is to do. And I think finish days really tired, really exhausted, and it's easy to let go of all the growth that got you to the point of your assistant principalship, right? I think most people do a great job. They've got their admin programs that they're in, and they usually develop a strong network. And then they're always talking to administrators and trying to grow. But then you get into that assistant principalship and you just start chasing your tail, and it can be really hard to prioritize your own growth. You have done an amazing job of staying focused on continually growing. And if people out there aren't following you on LinkedIn, they need to get on LinkedIn and follow. I think it's Dr. Nick Davies is what you go by there, because you're always posting, you're always sharing stuff. And so I've just been fascinated to watch your journey. And I wanted you to come on today and talk to assistant principals and aspiring assistant principals about how you prioritize your growth, because it's not about time management, it's about priority management. And you have prioritized your growth and your continual learning. So how do you do that?
Yeah, well, thank you for those really kind words. I appreciate that, Frederick. So it's certainly a challenge, and it's something I've continued to kind of like morph as each year I've been in an AP. And I started out as an athletic director and an assistant principal, and so that role, right, is almost all consuming, and that right there set the tone of like if you don't prioritize just your whole day and how you're going to work, every little thing is going to eat it up, right? Ref issues or bus issues or student issues, like you name it, it can fill up your day. And so what, you and I are both have a background in research. And so I do try to make sure that how I'm prioritizing is supported. And so the Walls Foundation back in 2021 put out a huge thing, and I'm blanking on the title of it, but it was essentially the new biggest research on principals. And in that, they argued that principals have as much or even slightly more impact on student achievement than the classroom teacher does. And so those four areas are what I try to focus on, right? Instructionally focused conversations with teachers, positive school climate, collaboration and PLCs, and then managing your personnel and your resources strategically. And so like that's kind of my theoretical way of like how I want to prioritize my day. And then, just looking at, okay, well, I've got all this stuff I need to get done. Like, during the day, I need to be focused on kids. I need to be focused on supporting teachers. And so that's where I'm starting off with, right? So I got to make sure I'm in classrooms. I always make a commitment to at least physically be present in every classroom every week, whether that's just a pop my head in to wave to the kids, wave to the teacher, which is sometimes all that I get, but that's all right. And other times it's actually to do like a little mini walkthrough, leave a positive sticky note on the teacher's desk or in their box. And so, you know, in prioritizing that, making sure that it matters. And I know that, you know, you and I have talked enough. I know that you talk a lot about like systems, and we need systems in place so we can actually focus on like the important tasks and not only do the urgent tasks in our building. And the urgent tasks get put on the assistant principal, which is okay. That's part of our job description. But at the same time, we then, if we're always focused on the urgent, we don't get the important done. So then my other piece of my, that I view my job as a priority is, okay, well, how can we build systems so all of us can work on important tasks? And so kind of taking a step back, I just recently had an article published by Edutopia. And this is one of those things that I talked about being able to prioritize. I talked about those priorities from the Wallace Foundation. And then another piece of getting a good return on your time as a time-starved leader is controlling what you can. Like, we do have control over our calendars to an extent. And so like sitting down in the weekend, I don't do a lot of work on the weekends, but I do look at my calendar and identify, okay, well, like, when can I get observations in? And, you know, are there meetings coming up that I need to prep for? Am I going to have to leave the building or go to the district office? Like, making sure that all that stuff's laid out. Do I have an early morning podcast that I need to make sure my principal knows about, if in case I miss a little bit of supervision, things like that. And then seeing, okay, on my list, is there anywhere that I can help support the principal, or are there ways that I can delegate a task to somebody else who is looking for a leadership role, or who would actually just be better fit to do it than me? You know, there's a lot of tasks that sometimes I think we get asked to do that are almost like just like inputting data, which, you know, which is fine. But at the same time, like, there's other bigger things that we can support. So I know that was a long way to answer your question. I try not to be long-winded. That was long-winded.
There are a couple great things I want to highlight in what you said. So I love you said, how do we build systems for all of us, right? And I think that's one, that there's multiple parts of this as an assistant principal. So the first is managing your priorities and trying to schedule out your priorities and make sure that you're attending to the systems that are going to help you. But that will only take you so far, because if you don't develop systems with everybody else, and systems that all your systems are going to touch other people. So if you haven't done it collaboratively, or if you're not approaching it in that team way, then you can develop great systems, but those systems are always going to be being stressed by the systems around you.
Yeah.
So I love this idea of taking, this is not me as how I'm creating my opportunities for instructional leadership. This is how we do it as a team. It's so, so much more powerful.
Yeah. Can I give a specific example too?
Oh, please.
So this actually just happened yesterday. We have a Tuesday team meeting after school with a bunch of different people. And what we've noticed at one of the schools that I support is that almost all of our radio calls, all of those like classroom support, student support calls, are coming from kindergarten this year at one of the schools that I work at. And so we sat down with our kindergarten teachers, all of our specialists, right? Tons of people, support people. And so what we're going to do is we're going to have targeted pullout times to work on this, the lagging skills that these kids have. That's a team effort, right? It's going to take resources. It's going to take people's time during their day. But that's actually it's an intentional system we're building, because the urgent task that we keep responding to is misbehavior in the moment. And why is a kindergartner misbehaving? It really is just because they have a lagging skill. So we're going to take our highest hitters, it's about 8 of them, and we're going to, in groups of 2 or 3, we're going to teach them what we believe those skills are, right? Partner with the parents, the teachers, every specialist in the building. We've gotten district office support, right? So that's an intentional system. And hopefully, although right now it's going to mean like, when we take some of those specialists away from what they were doing to support these kids, I'm going to have to jump in and do extra work. But then in 2 months or next year when they're first graders, hopefully we've built a foundation. So now we're not responding to all of these radio calls.
Yeah, this is like the epitome of strategic leadership, right? Because in urgent leadership, we're focusing on those tasks. We focus on the symptoms. So we just keep treating those same things over and over and not making the progress we want. And then Either we think because we're staying busy, we're doing what we need to do, or worse, we say we've got all these discipline issues, we need to do this big school-wide program, right? And what you're talking about is strategic leadership, where we pause, we think about what's most important here, and we take the time to look at what's the problem. So we're not going to keep doing the same thing all over. We're going to look at these kids and realize they're lagging skills. So our classic kind of discipline approach is not going to work for these kids. Let's actually start to make progress on this. And I think that's huge. And, you know, I'm a big advocate of incremental change. So you guys have set up some good systems, it sounds like, and you're really going to focus in on those kids. It is going to be interesting to see how quickly the situation improves. Not that it will be perfect, no, but to make that immediate change so that teachers feel like, okay, this is getting a little bit better, because that even that those small steps in progress can be empowering to people.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that you talked about was kind of controlling what you can, and then related to that, I think doing what you can do. And there's this, assistant principals really want to serve, right? The position, you don't go into that position if you don't want to be a servant leader. And one of the traps of that is that APs start thinking, I can do all these things for people. And if I'm doing things for people, then I'm helping them and I'm being valuable. And I like to flip it to what you just talked about. The big way that you can really impact and serve your teachers is to do what only you can do. Because if you're doing something other people can do, then we're losing capacity. And I don't know, you can tell me how many people in your schools have the ability to go in and support and grow teachers. Probably not very many.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just a few of us, right? We got our instructional coach who, both schools I'm at, they're phenomenal, right? And they're the principals. And then there aren't many others who go into classrooms and do that exact work.
No. And it's always, everything's an opportunity cost. So the real question isn't, can I do something? It's, if I do this thing, what is it? What's the other thing that I can't do? And so I think being mindful that there aren't a bunch of other people being able to go in and support and grow my teachers. So that has to be one of those big priorities. And that's where I need to be investing my time.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So talk about some of the things that you do to continually grow, because I think you have to build things into your day somewhere that you're learning. It's obvious you're a really reflective practitioner. So can you talk a little bit about how you incorporate room to grow in your day?
Yeah. You know, I think that needs to be, we have to find time specifically in our work days to do a little bit of professional development, whether it's reading, whether it's talking with a colleague in your district, even if it's about a problem of practice, that still is a way to grow. So for me, I, you know, each morning I've got my own morning routine, but then one of the things that I do is I listen to podcasts as I kind of get ready for the day. And they're all all but one are education focused. I've got, a triathlon one I like to listen to as well. And so that's one way right there. And then another way is that, you know, I want to find things to read. And I have found that just as my life gets busier and what's going on, I don't read as many education books as I used to. And that's not because I shouldn't. I desperately need to. And so I do subscribe to things like the Marshall Memo, which summarizes a bunch of educational articles into a short thing. I'm fortunate as a member of AWSP, the Washington, my Washington association, that they subscribe to the main idea from Jen David Lang. So she does book summaries. And so I read those. And so those are ways that I can find kind of like shorter versions of things to read, and make sure that I'm still learning from that. And then I'm a curious person. I love learning from others. And so I reach out to people and just say, hey, like, can we talk leadership? If I read an interesting book or an interesting article, I'm probably going to reach out to the person who wrote it and just say, like, do you have 15 minutes? I am shocked every time that people say, yeah, of course, I'd love to talk about it. And there's been some really big people that have given me their time, right? And they charge, thousands of dollars to go speak in groups, and then they just say, oh yeah, of course, I'd love to talk to you for free. And so that I think that in and of itself, because it's been so fascinating, has been one of my biggest areas for professional development is just you can find 20 minutes in your day, 30 minutes in your day, especially if you work with the people who you work with. If it has to be during your work day, I try my best to I actually rarely do it while the kids are in the building, right? And so after the school day, you can be pretty flexible. But then I just make sure my principal knows, like, okay, hey, I've got a meeting here. I'm shutting my door. I'm going to be out of commission for 30 minutes. And then what make sure that the principal always supports me is that then I share what I've learned, right? And so he is getting some stuff from that as well. So I find that time, right? And again, we talked a little bit about like prioritizing what is important to us. Personal growth is super important to me, and so I find time in my day, to make sure that I've got 15 minutes here and 20 minutes there, so I can focus on myself of learning. And then I think the absolute key to that, though, is like you can do all the learning you want. If you don't do anything with it, like what's the point? And so that Barbara Smith, who's written a bunch of books and someone I've talked with a lot, she says theory without action is useless. And that right there, right? So if you know the theory, great, go put it to use. And you might try something out like this kindergarten thing that I just mentioned earlier. We're hopefully going to get it implemented next week. It could fail, right? And that we are willing for that to be an option. Because if we don't do anything, we already know the results. We're just going to be constantly running around trying to fix these problems. So we're going to try something new. And if it fails, great. That's a learning opportunity. That's a stepping stone, right? It's not the end point, it's a stepping stone. We're going to learn from that, use it as professional development, and get better for the next iteration.
Yeah, I think it's so important to be able to bring that stuff back. And I like, you've talked about, I call it like fast food learning, right? You don't have time to sit down and read the book. And that's okay. And in fact, we live in an age where that kind of learning is much easier to do. And I think coming back and talking with your principal or whoever it is, and debriefing that is really critical. And I think the other piece you haven't talked about, but I'm sure you have it built in, is reflection. Because I know you're taking time at the end of the day, or at some point, you're building time in to reflect on your practice. Because in the end, that's the best growth. If we can get those new ideas and new knowledge, and we can try that stuff out, it's really the reflection that's going to anchor that in and help us know what works for us. So, how do you reflect?
Yeah, so for me, and this is, kind of changed over time, is that it's actually become a writing piece for me, and that's so I have a weekly blog, and you mentioned it. It's on LinkedIn, and then I've also added it, turned it into a podcast, Monday Mornings with Dr. Nick, and it's 10 minutes or less of just me summarizing my thoughts of what I've learned, and so that has become my reflection piece, whether it's during the week that I find some time to sit down and think about what I've learned, if it's on the weekend. That has become huge. So, the following that I have is growing, which is cool. But really it's a selfish thing. I do it for me because it's time for me to reflect and to get my thoughts down and really figure out what I've learned, because then that helps me the next week or the week after, as I then try to put some of these practices into my daily practice. And so without that writing piece or without that podcast piece, I don't know if I would take as much, from these meetings, because sitting down and synthesizing all of the stuff that I've been learning, that's been really important. And so then this idea that I have been struggling with the last couple, probably the last 6 weeks or so, 2024, is, well, there's all these other things. I go to district meetings that are, AP, little mini PD sessions. Great. Like I haven't been sitting down and reflecting on those. And like, so how can I incorporate all of those other things that are actually built into our days, as assistant principals, where I could be, where I am learning? And so I'm trying to figure out what that will look like. But even last week, I think I was in two different meetings where I had definitely some takeaways, and along with some reading I was doing, like, okay, how am I incorporating all of that into these writings and stuff? So that's the next step for me.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing to think about. So I write every day. I have a journal or book that's probably the first thing, either I do exercise or I start writing and I capture all these ideas. And a lot of it is stuff that I've been thinking about. A lot of it is stuff that I've heard other people talk about. And that synthesis is so important, because I think that synthesis is where we're able to translate theory into action, right? Because you can read all kinds of great ideas and things that are working in other buildings, but you have to synthesize that into what makes sense in your context with your people in your building and your skill set. So that that reflection is really that translation. I don't know that we can really do a quality job of taking in everything that we learn, right? There's just too much out there. And it seems to me that it's okay to make conscious decisions to say, that was nice, but I'm going to invest more of my attention on this concept.
Yeah. I actually think, yes. Like I think that's really important, of understanding like what really matters. And one of the things that I think we can sometimes do in education is that idea of initiative fatigue, right? And I know Peter DeWitt recently has been talking a lot about like de-implementing different things in your building or in your district, because if we're no longer using them, then let's get rid of them and just what we do focus on something, do it really well. My father-in-law is a basketball coach in Oregon. And just go watch them play, and they run the same inbounds play, and they have his entire career, and it works every single time because they do that to perfection before they do anything else. And just like watching little things like that, you're like, cause that's kind of a way that we can all learn. And so I think another piece of that is I didn't always do a good job of this, but I've now started to, is, I'm not like listening to podcasts 24/7, right? I'm not trying to learn 24/7. When I get home, because I get up pretty early and I start my day early and I try to get a lot of my learning done in the morning, when I get home, I try to be present. And then I'm trying to shut down slowly as the night goes on. So even after the kids go to bed, like as I clean up the house or whatever, I don't put in the headphones anymore to try to keep going. Like, how much can I listen to? How much can I learn? That needs to, as you said, like, we can't take it all in. And so I'm trying to intentionally stop taking more in, which means I also do things like I read fewer news articles than I was, or right, listen to like news headlines, things like that. I'm trying to do that less, just because we can only take in so much.
Yeah. I get three things I want to share all related to that. So the first one is, when we are listening to something, sometimes it's a matter of taking away one specific idea, right? So there may be 10 things out there, but there's one thing that really speaks to me. And I think being attentive to what that thing is. And a lot of times I'll hear something, I'll go write it down, or I'll make sure that I come back to it the next day in my journal. So it's that one piece that I want to take away. Number two is, it's in the quiet space that the things that you learned or the ideas you've been exposed to are able to percolate, and you're able to start to see how they can be of value to you. If we never take that quiet space, then we may have all these ideas, but they're all bouncing around. And so actually making wise application becomes really challenging. So I applaud you for doing that. And everybody out there, I urge you to do a couple things. One is, create more quiet space for yourself. We don't need to be taking our phones into the bathroom. You don't need to jump up first thing in the meeting and in the morning and check your social media. And in the evening, when you're doing dinner or whatever it is, you can have quiet time on. And then related to that, you talked about transitioning away from work and focusing that learning time in the morning. Like, in the morning is when we should be getting ready for work. That's when we can be learning. We can be really doing a lot of that reflection. But if you can't walk away from this job to the greatest extent possible, if you don't have some kind of a routine for closing your day down and then entering into your home life or your family life, if you can't do that, you're going to burn out in this profession.
Yeah. I have found that for me, and I'm still certainly growing in this area, like for sure, is mindfulness practices, like intentional, like sitting just focusing on your breath in the morning or times throughout the day has helped me been able to focus on just being at home when I'm at home. I definitely remember when I first started in this job, like I'd come home and I would just like, you know, talk with my wife about like, here's all my frustrations from the day. And I feel like, although, yeah, I certainly still do that at times. I do that significantly less now because I can actually like become husband, become father as I go home and not, I'm not as worried about what's going on at work. Like that work is going to be there tomorrow, right? If something is so desperate, I'm going to get a phone call from someone who says, you need to take care of this. Great. We'll figure it out. But, that almost never happens, right? The work will still be there tomorrow. But you know, my kids, my wife, like if I'm not there, they're going to find it. They're going to be gone at some point. Right. That's not worth it.
Yeah. And everybody out there with kids, your kids are going to be gone faster than you realize. We were talking earlier. My oldest is 30. My youngest is 26 and it has gone really quickly. So value that time with your kids. And I know I was one of those people that always said family first, but when I look back on it, that's not what I did. The other thing that's really interesting, I used to release this podcast at 3 p.m. thinking, oh, it's great. It comes out, you know, people can listen on their drive home. And then I had on Dr. Helen Kelly, who does some great work around burnout. And it was one of the things that she said was making sure that you are doing things that are a transition out of work. And that when you step out of that building and you get into that car, start focusing on the other part of your life. So listen to music, listen to something that's about your hobbies. You can listen to that triathlon podcast on the way home. You know, do the stuff that's going to take you into your home, not drag your work with you. So we actually now release the podcast at 6 a.m., right? So people can listen to it on the drive-in. The other thing I want to hit on before we transition here is the idea of synchronicity. There's so much coming at us all the time. How do we decide what's of value in that moment? And I really believe if we create that quiet space and we listen and we pay attention and we're intentional in things, we will find that there is information that comes to us or there are experiences or we meet people that come to us and they have the right thing that we need in the right moment. And so learning to really listen to that and to be attuned to that when you're trying to struggle with these kindergartners and figure out what you're going to do, and then you hear something that speaks to that specific thing. I think that's the universe telling you, hey, this is something valuable. This is what you can attend to.
Yeah. I've definitely had those moments, right? You're like, okay, we're struggling with this issue. You start to focus and then either it's through something that a PD that you're doing or a conversation you have with someone and you're like, hold on, like that's actually exactly what I need at this moment. I'm blanking on some specific issues off the top of my head, but I know what you're talking about and definitely have been there.
Yeah. Nick, we've already talked a little bit about family and kids, and you have a 5, a 3, and a 1-year-old. Congratulations. Yep. How do you build that time for reflection and for your own continual growth and yet make sure that you have that time there with your family and for your kids?
So it's always evolving. I'm never perfect. But this is something I would say that this has become my biggest thing that I'm curious about. So I mentioned that I like to reach out to people I'm interested in. I always ask them if they believe in balance and how they figure it out. And then I also always ask them about being time starved. I believe as school leaders, we are time starved leaders. And so that has become a big focus of mine. And so here's what I have found out, and I'm trying to put this into practice in my own life is one, getting in alignment with your values, goals, and passions. And I've talked about this in other places, but there's a cool activity that if you sit down, and I know we don't have time for it here, but sit down, identify what are your top core values, family integrity and health are mine. What are your, you know, personal and professional goals, list them out. And what are you passionate about and see where you're in alignment and see where you're out of alignment. And especially with those goals, sometimes those goals can be so out of alignment with your values, that that's gonna be a disconnect right there, right? Like if I'm open that I want to be a superintendent one day, but if that doesn't match my value of taking care of my family, then I have no desire for that goal, right? I only want that goal if my family can stay at the top of my priority. And I know that it, depending on the district and what's going on, like that's just not the case, right? And that's okay. So that alignment piece, I think, is huge. Because it can help you kind of stay centered and make sure that if when those things are in alignment, you're actually gonna, I think you're gonna progress farther in your career, you're gonna feel happier, right? All of those types of things. So that's one piece that I've been trying to focus on. Another one is being present. So there are days that I need to work later. Either it's planned or it's unplanned, and it was just such a hectic day. I gotta make, 20 phone calls and we gotta take care of all these things. But when I get home, my kids need my full presence. And before we were talking about our kids before we started, and just thinking about like, so my 5 and 3 year old, when they eat, that's what they do, right? They don't have a phone, they have no technology. They sit there and they eat and they talk, right? They talk like crazy, which then makes them take forever to eat. But like that's they do one thing at a time, right? And that's all that they're doing. They're fully engaged. And that type of presence that they have of just what, like, that's awesome. Like I'm so envious of that, of like how they just sit there and they do one thing. I'm terrible at that, right? Which is why I have to intentionally work on my mindfulness practices. And so I like being present, I think, is huge. So at least when you are with them, they get your full attention. Right. And same thing at work, though. I try to be, when I'm at work, I try to be totally engaged at work. So then if I'm not switching between a bunch of things, then I can get out of here sooner. And then the last piece of, being able to take care of, like, be with my family, take care of it is, I need to take care of myself. Like, I need to be a healthy individual, in order to be a great employee, to be a great husband, to be a great father. Right. So you got to exercise, you got to eat right. You got to sleep, which is that sleep piece is something I'm working on. I've never made sleep a priority. And it's my biggest goal for 2024 is to, I got that 1 year old. She doesn't always sleep too well, but is to, set out, okay, I'm going to be in bed so I can be in bed for 7.5 hours or so, something like that, right? I might not sleep that whole time, but I've never done that, right? I can't tell you the number of times, especially when I was an AD and working on my doctorate, of I'm going to go to bed at 11 or 12 and I'm going to get up at 3 and I'm just going to grind and grind and grind. And I know I can do it, but that's not sustainable and it's just miserable.
One of the big steps to sustainability is moving from assigning so much value to how hard you work, because everybody's working hard.
Yes.
How well are you investing in your recovery? Because if you're going to be in it for the long game, if you really do hold those values, then you have to invest in your own recovery and you have to help sustain that. The other thing you talked about being present, and that's the idea is fully present, right? We have our time and we have our attention, and we can be present without giving our attention. And that happens all the time. That's exactly what you were talking about with your kids. And so being fully present with that attention is really critical. It's funny. My oldest kid, Gwen, gave me an old-fashioned the safety razor. So it's not the multi-bladed things that we use. It's a two-sided razor. And so I started using it just because they gave it to me and I want to think of her. But there's a sharp blade there. And so I found when I'm shaving in the morning, I have to really focus because I don't want to cut myself. And I have found it to be so calming and relaxing. Because when I'm shaving, I'm not thinking about anything else. I am fully present. And so we want to be fully present for people in our lives. But even when we're fully present for tasks, that brings a level of calm and just positive feelings that it's hard to describe.
That's exactly right. What I I'm going for when I am with my kids, and I'm trying to do that at school as well, right? And a good friend of mine, Will Parker, who I know you've had on the podcast, and you've been on his, is, I think it's in his book, Messaging Matters. He talks about like when you're talking with teachers, instead of just saying how's it going, because that can be, not like a real question. I think you said that you got to ask the second question, right, to actually get an answer. Or if you're not going for that way of, instead of asking how you're doing, asking how can I help, and show them that you're like, you are there, you're present with them, and you're just giving of yourself to be supportive. I think it's kind of on that same line of what you're talking about being just fully engaged in what you're doing.
Can we talk about that balance thing real quick? I want to, how have you come to understand this idea of being balanced?
So for me, like my personal view is that I think it's kind of possible. I like the idea of like a well-balanced life and not like a work-life balance, because I think that kind of skews where work should be, right? If it's work-life balance, then that means work is first, which I don't think any of us agree, although it does take up a large portion of our time. So that idea of a well-balanced life, that means, so in the life of an AP, there are times, like for us in Vancouver, January is when we're wrapping up like mid-year evaluations, and we've got a lot of meetings and transitioning from, the semesters. And so there's a lot going on. And so I know I'm going to be working more hours at that time. And so that, which is fine. My wife and I can plan for that. We know that it's going to happen. And then we also know that, come July and August and most and lot parts of June, right? Those are way down times. But then there's also, I feel like November is one of those times where it can be busy, but there's a lot of days off, right? Like there's not as much going on, where then I can actually be more focused at home than I am at work, right? I can work some shorter hours, things like that. And so that's where I view balance, because, it's just really tough. So many of the people, right? I interview people every week, and so many people I talk to just say like they just don't flat out don't believe in balance. And I'm with them in terms of like that, if you just look at the work life, right? But I think if you look at it from a year perspective or a 2 year perspective, like I disagree, and I do think you can have that kind of well-balanced life.
Well, it's interesting because it's something that is talked about all the time, achieving balance, but I don't think it's something that is questioned. It is assumed that yes, if we can balance, that's a good thing. And I had this experience at one point where my personal family life, my social life, my professional life were all in balance. I really balanced. And I was mediocre at everything, right? Because that's what to me, that's what balance came to be. And I do not like that feeling. I don't want to be mediocre. So I replace the idea of balance with juggling. And that goes right back to that presence. So if I have some big thing, like we're getting the book ready to get pushed out right now, that demands a lot of attention. And that's what I will focus on. And I will, when I'm working on that, I'm going to give that 100% of my attention. But then when I've done what I needed to do, now it's off the plate. So now I turn to the next thing. That has worked for me to think about not trying to divide up my time to cover everything, but to really be committed and focused to whatever the thing is that I've chosen to work on at that moment. And then the key is to make sure that those balls that you're juggling represent those different pieces of your life. And yes, definitely there are times when it's going to be more work related. There's times when you can invest more in the home. Wow. All right. This has been fun, Nick. I have a couple closing questions for you, though. All
Okay, let's go.
right. So this is the softball one for you, really easy. What part of your own leadership are you still trying to get better
Shoot, all of it. Right.
at?
I always have room for growth. I'm honest with people about that. So I think there's really two areas though that I am intentionally working on. One, I am always trying to be a better instructional leader. I want to get be able to give better coaching feedback to the teachers I support, right? So that's one piece that I am intentionally working on. And then the other one is, which we talked earlier about, is working on systems in our school buildings. So if I leave or somebody leaves, then those systems are going to stay in place and be helpful for the next people who come through, right? So then they can focus on a new problem and not a problem that I didn't get to addressing. So I think those are my two areas of growth.
And if listeners could take just one thing away from today's show, what would it be?
Never stop learning, and you have to then put that learning into practice and be willing to fail with it. Is that one thing?
Yes, that works. That's a concept. It's a package. Nick, this has been great. Where can people learn more about you?
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn, Nick Davies, PhD. You can check out my website, www.drnickdavies.com. That's drnickdavies.com. And that's also my email address, drnickdavies@gmail.com. Reach out, happy to chat with anyone. And then, you know, I do speak. Like this summer, I'll be in San Diego at the Visible Learning Conference. I'll be at the United Conference in Nashville. I'll be in Spokane at the AWSP Conference. Right. So I'll be speaking throughout the country this summer, hopefully some other spots.
Thank you for learning, but then also being just so willing and so committed to sharing your learning with other people who are walking the same journey.
Thank you.
All right, Nick, take care.
See ya.
I hope you enjoyed listening to this show as much as I did recording it. There is a lot to unpack here, but I'm just going to hold myself to four basic comments. So the first thing is to do what only you can do. There are a limited number of people in your building who can help support and grow teachers. So make sure to stay focused on doing what only you can do to the greatest extent possible. Secondly, more is not better. Learning is absolutely critical, but sometimes we can learn more by focusing on one idea, one new strategy, one tool, one thing that has come into our lives through synchronicity of the right thing at the right time. Third, reflection is as important as learning. In fact, deep learning is not going to happen unless or until you reflect. So if you think of yourself as a learning assistant principal, yes, take in that information, but then create the quiet time to think about and process that and let it all settle out. And then finally, it's the systems piece. We need systems for ourselves, but we also need systems for our teams. And when we can build those systems, that's the thing that's going to help us to do the things that only we can do, to find the time to learn, but also to create the time to reflect. Leadership is a journey, and thank you for choosing to walk some of this magical path with me. You can find links to all sorts of stuff in the show notes, including my website, frederickbuskey.com. If you haven't grabbed a copy of my new book, A School Leader's Guide to Reclaiming Purpose, please consider jumping onto Amazon or heading to my website and purchase a copy. The book covers so many of the things we talked about today and includes a systematic approach to escaping the gravitational pull of urgency so you can be that strategic leader Nick and I discussed today. I love hearing from you, so consider dropping me an email at frederick@frederickbuskey.com or connecting with me on LinkedIn. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. Have a great rest of the week. Be present for others, and more importantly, take time to reflect and recover so you can continue to live and lead better. Cheers.